Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive and Positively. I'm out on the road, but I will be home by Monday night. The Detroit Lions coming to Baltimore. We're 1-1, and Luke Jones joins us now. He's been out in Owings Mills where things get backed up a day. You get a little crunch, and then next week, Chiefs on short notice. So certainly radar up for John Harbaugh with tough game on Monday night. I always think with these NFC teams, they handle their business, and certainly they handled their business the last time against the Detroit Lions, but this time isn't last time, as the Bills found out 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, I mean it was 2 years ago. I think at that point in time there was a sense of how real are the Lions, and they've been very real in the NFC. But that said, I mean they're still chasing January success and a Super Bowl and all that, just like we're talking about with this current iteration of the Ravens. But it is funny, you go back to that game and there was a lot of hype for that. You know, it was a Sunday afternoon game. It wasn't prime time like this one, but I looked at it and I think everyone remembers the Ravens handling them in emphatic fashion, but it was 28 to nothing midway through the second quarter. The Ravens had 350 plus yards of offense in the first half. I mean, they completely stomped them,
Well,
and
they were boat
basically,
racing a lot of teams for a number of years. There were
sure.
five or six games every year where they'd be up 28 to nothing. This was just a garden variety beatdown of an NFC team, and there've been a lot of those.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, going back to, I guess, until the Eagles came into Baltimore early December last year and beat them and obviously ended up winning the Super Bowl. So no shame in that really, but it just speaks to what the standard, what the burden has been for an NFC team that isn't used to facing Lamar Jackson. And now bring it back to the last 2 years, not facing Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry at the same time. It's certainly a tall order. I mean, for Detroit or for any team that doesn't see this offense very frequently. Now, that being said, you go back and look at what happened in week two against the Cleveland Browns. Going back and reviewing that game, Nestor, the Ravens' offensive line got handled. I mean, and handled throughout the day. There was a, t I mean, first of all, they didn't run the ball at all. I mean, it was the lowest rushing total they've ever had with Lamar Jackson starting at quarterback.
Or Derrick
And
Henry in some way, since he's been here, where like you give him the ball that much, you don't, he didn't break a run. I mean, at all,
right.
right? So,
But
yeah.
I understood on that, but we're going back to 2018. Games that Lamar Jackson has started, that was the fewest, you know, that total was the smallest rushing total the Ravens have had with Lamar upright and starting the game. So it speaks to one, Cleveland does have a good defensive line. This Detroit defensive line isn't that, but still has Aiden Hutchinson. It's still formidable. And I think there's very much a challenge here for this offensive line to bounce back. You know, they got, like I said, they got handled by Cleveland, and the offensive success that the Ravens had, a lot of it was Lamar scrambling, and then as the game went on, hitting some big chunk plays down the field, of course, and he finished with four touchdown passes. So there's that. But on the flip side, then for me, I look at this Ravens defense and say, all right, rebounded from Buffalo, good. You handle Joe Flacco and the Cleveland Browns offense that is so lacking of playmakers that they played and played extensively their starting running, their rookie running back who hadn't practiced with the team since June until that week leading up to the game.
Which
So
tells you that Stefanski thought he was their only hope, right? Literally.
it speaks to their lack of playmakers. And let's face it, God bless them. I love Joe Flacco, but we're
It's
not
over there.
talking. So this is a different challenge for this defense. And we've already talked about Kyle Van Noy. He's not going to play this week. I mean, not official, but all signs are pointing to him at missing at least a couple games here with the hamstring. They do have some other guys banged up as you and I are talking. You know, Nate Wiggins dealing with a groin issue. Marlon Humphrey, we know, left the game Sunday, but full practice early in the week indicates, you know, you're feeling good about his availability. But that's a big matchup when you talk about Marlon Humphrey going up against Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL and works out of the slot quite a bit. So Madubuike's dealt with a little bit of a neck issue this week, you know, and I'm not saying all these guys are going to be out on Monday night, but you are talking about a Ravens defense, and more specifically talking about the edge group, because we do know, you know, all signs with Van Noy, it's going to be a couple weeks here, it feels like, if not a little longer than that. You know, you've got a very talented duo of running backs when you're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. They're absolutely going to test these edge guys with setting the edge. And I get it, Jared Goff's not a guy that's going to take off and run like Josh Allen back in week one, but he's also someone who is coming off of a big performance and certainly has a lot of weapons at his disposal. So for me, as I said, I want to see the offensive line bounce back. And, I think Detroit has their hands full with this offense. There's no question about that. I certainly expect the Ravens to score plenty of points. But on the flip side, defense, all right. It's great to puff out your chest and rebound and play the way that you did against Cleveland. And they needed to, because we talked about how the offense was stuck in the mud in the first half of that football game. But this is a step up. This is a challenge through the air and in stopping the run with this Detroit offense. So, I think on paper it sets up to potentially become a shootout, but I think you want to see this Ravens defense. They're not going to shut them down like they did against Cleveland, but you want to see better than you saw in week one, right? You don't want to see this defense collapse, especially in the fourth quarter, because you look at these wide receivers. I mentioned St. Brown, but you also have Jameson Williams on the outside, speed. Khalif Raymond's no slouch, so they have a good tight end in Sam Laporta. So Detroit has weapons. They absolutely have weapons. That I think their defense, because they're not at full strength with their defensive line, they still have a couple guys on the PUP list, because I think we all remember kind of monitoring that from afar, how many injuries the Lions had last year with their defense. So they're still not at full strength in that regard, but they have plenty of weapons that if you tell me this game, both teams are, it's midway through the fourth quarter and it's 31 to 28 or 34 to 31 or something like that, I wouldn't at all be surprised, even if you're hoping for the Ravens defense to build what they did on week two.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there in Owings Mills for all things football this weekend, getting you ready for Monday night. Everything's a little off schedule. The Chiefs next week don't look as tough as maybe the Chiefs once did. The Lions, obviously, Super Bowl contender. Let's go back to the offensive line. I remember you and I spending days and weeks and months in the offseason last year in spring and summer. Who's going to be the offensive line? Who's going to play left tackle? Where's Ben Cleveland? Where's Patrick McCary? Linderbaum, is he going to stay healthy? This, the right tackle, they drafted him. Is he going to play? Who's going to play and how often? Now we look at this a year into it. Last year, we stopped talking about the offensive line. I don't know, about this time last year, second, third, fourth game last year, it felt like it was going to be good enough. And certainly Ronnie Stanley was, five question marks, not one, just based on all of his injuries and where he was and the significance of the position and Derrick Henry coming in. I mean, this time last year, we're talking about Derrick Henry being a little old and wait and see. And then last week, he couldn't run the ball. They couldn't run the ball. Where are you on the offensive line in totality? In that, we spent 6 months last year, offseason, discussing the offensive line. I don't know. Did you and I have discussed a leaky offensive line, an incapable offensive line, less than what John wants, below the bar positions? The thing we had last year were penalties, right? Penalties were the biggest problem in the offensive line. It wasn't necessarily, hey, they can't do it and they can't run the ball. I mean, there was never a point we thought where they're going to have trouble running the ball because they didn't. Now, I don't know. It's a new year. How are you feeling about the offensive line a year older? And a year into this Falele thing that, I don't know, has he had a game where you thought, well, he's coming. He's going to be a Pro Bowl guard.
Well, I mean, he's had some good performances, and I think it's very easy to pile on him because it just kind of looks out of place, right? I mean, he started out as a right tackle. They moved
Well,
him
he's a
into guard.
tackle playing guard, basically, right?
So, I mean, I'll say, let me provide my caveat, and then I'll go into how I feel about where they are right now. Offensive line plays an issue around the league. There are very, very, very few offensive lines. And I'm talking even amongst contenders. I mean, look at Kansas City. Their downfall in two of these Super Bowls, when you go back to Tampa 5 years ago and against
Oh, they've been
Philadelphia,
5 years trying to figure it out, right?
they,
Literally,
they
yeah.
yeah, I mean, left tackle's been an issue for them. Right. So,
And we'll
I mean,
talk
when you're
about that next week on the short week.
right. So when you're talking about the gold standard, even having warts with their offensive line in recent years, it speaks to, for every Philadelphia that has an offensive line that from left tackle all the way to right tackle, you feel really good about. You
And they
have.
retire a guy in the middle of it, right?
Sure.
It's
Right.
like
Right.
after Marshall Yanda left, we wouldn't miss a beat, right?
Right. Exactly. I mean, so that's my caveat that I feel like every team in the league, and let me be more specific, even most contenders in the league have a Daniel Faalele, whether it's right guard, whether it's left guard, whether it's right tackle, you know, whatever the position, center, they have a spot where you'd say, man, I'd like better there. So that being said, they were bad against Cleveland. And look, let me be clear. The Browns have a great defensive line. I mean, for all the talk about their deficiencies as a football team, as an organization, Myles Garrett still might be the very best defensive player on the planet. I mean, that's how good that guy is. That's how great that guy is. I mean, there are some reps, Ronnie Stanley, and you know, you were just singing the praises of Ronnie Stanley for last year, and rightfully so, what he's been able to do here, finally staying healthy and looking like the guy, more and more like the guy he was once upon a time before the ankle injury. But there are some reps Ronnie Stanley could not have enjoyed reviewing because it made him look bad. But Myles Garrett does that a lot to a lot of people. They have other formidable defensive linemen. So that said, I do look at the guard positions. Falele is a below average starting guard. I mean, I think he was last year. I think he has games where he looks better. I think what's interesting about him is what he actually is compared to what I think maybe the expectations were when he first moved the guard. It's kind of counterintuitive. You would think a guy with that kind of size would do what? Maul people in the run game. And it's really the opposite. He doesn't really play that big in the run game and he doesn't move very well. Yet in pass protection, there are a lot of times where a defensive tackle or whoever, you know, some kind of stun, a twist that some kind of defensive line game to get someone, you know, trying to get a free rusher, and they just can't get around him because he's just so big. So there's that. But I think the other part here, and this is where I think we need to be fair, I if you look at social media, you'll see plenty of fan angst, even some media angst about Falele. I'll be totally honest, Nestor, having reviewed the first couple games, I think Voorhees has been worse at left guard. So now, Patrick McCary, was he an all-pro guard last year? No. But keep in mind, Voorhees played the first few weeks. It didn't go incredibly well. Keep in mind, their offense in general was choppy out of the block. That's why they started 0-2. But he wasn't great. Then he got hurt in at the end of that Dallas game, and they put in McCary. It worked out better, and they just ran with that, right? And I don't think it was this massive indictment of Voorhees as much as it was, hey, we trust Patrick McCary. He's better than him right now. We just ran for a boatload of yards against Buffalo in that week four game, and they just stuck with it. So
It always
he's
felt like they
gone.
didn't want to start McCary. It always felt like
He
they
was always,
always wanted him to be the sixth
he was the
guy.
utility guy.
And they always felt like something's going to happen to Stanley and we're going to need him. You know what I mean? Like that was really what
I
that
mean,
was
he played
about, I
off.
think.
I mean, and if you recall, the one thing that we did talk about in the offseason with the offensive line, I did say, I know I wrote this multiple times, they would miss Patrick McCary. Now, that's not a criticism of Eric DaCosta. I wouldn't have paid Patrick McCary what Jacksonville gave him for what you wanted him to be. But you're still talking about someone who on game day can play all five offensive line spots to a level that's capable to good, you know, competent, let's say, to good, depending on the spot, you know, depending on the matchup. So you miss a guy like that. And I think right now with their two guards, you know, you need to see the play elevated a little bit. You know, even Linderbaum had some issues against Cleveland. And again, it speaks to the Browns' defensive line. So I don't think Detroit, save for Aiden Hutchinson, I mean, they do have DJ Reader, who Ravens fans are familiar with some of his, you know, some of his previous teams, previous stops, you know, even in the AFC North. But, you know, they still have a group that can pose some challenges. But for me, I do look at the two guards right now and say, you need better than them. Fans automatically will default to Ben Cleveland. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ben Cleveland wouldn't be better or as good or whatever,
Well,
but
John Harbaugh doesn't think so, right?
it's the
Neither does
reality.
Todd Monken doesn't think so,
Their
right?
coaching staff for multiple years has told you exactly how they feel about Ben Cleveland. And they signed him. And look, we talked about the off field with the DUI. They signed him for a minimum contract. They think he's a capable backup. They don't trust him to start multiple games. Now, that said, if their guards continue to play like they've played, and you know, it's not as though they were awful in week one, although certainly situationally down the stretch in week one, Buffalo's defensive line got the best of them when they needed to, you know, pick up a first down, you know, move the chains, control the clock, and they couldn't do that quite as well. But you want to see a rebound from those guys. I don't have any concerns about Linderbaum whatsoever, right? Bad game aside, he's a Pro Bowl center. Stanley, for me, it's about health. And he goes up against Myles Garrett. He looked bad against Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett makes most
I
guys look
want to see him
bad.
look good, though. He's a left
Sure.
tackle
No
protecting the best
question. And
quarterback
he's
in the
making $20
league.
million a year. Sure.
And
That's
it,
fair.
you know, I need to see, I need to know that it's 2018 again for him to some degree, because they're going to need that.
No question.
And I go back to the day he went down 5, 6 years ago, and I turned to my wife and I said, they can't win the Super Bowl without him. They can't win the Super Bowl if he's going to get manhandled by every Myles Garrett, by every elite rusher, because there's going to be six or eight of them this year,
Sure.
and he can't get his ass beat in half the games. I mean, that while Falele and, you know, wherever they are on the rest of the line, Voorhees are struggling. How do you feel about right tackle?
I think Rosengarten, for the most part, I feel good about. I don't, you know, he had some reps in week one that weren't great, you know, to put it mildly. You know, he wasn't his best performance probably, but you know, I think my concern is much more so with the guards. And when I say concern, it's relative. I don't think it's like I'm not sitting here saying, oh, they need way, 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 way better guard play for them to have a chance to win the Super Bowl. No,
Well,
it.
way would be 24-23 fourth quarter. They've got the ball with 4 minutes and they can't run the ball.
And
If you
that's the
can't run the
depth.
ball in the fourth quarter, it's not good enough.
And
I mean that's really the truth.
sure.
In
And
close
I.
games and shutting the door and what they're trying to accomplish in winning a Super Bowl, they're not going to go out and boat. They're not going to be up 28-0 in the second quarter on, I don't think they're that team right now. I really don't. I need to see that team first.
Well, I mean, it's tough to say they can't, they're not that team offensively because, I mean, look how many points they've scored the first 2 weeks.
80
But
one.
you do kind of wonder, it's like, okay, it's one thing to hold the Cleveland Browns down as a defense. You kind of question where this defense is right now in terms of how they'll do against the Detroit offense that has plenty of weapons. So, but, you know, I want to see more out of the guards. I definitely do. Look, this is still, I mean, let's. The only thing that overreact, you know, you have overreaction in week one, you get plenty of that in week two also. I kind of feel like week three is when all these teams, I want to say settle, that's the wrong word, but you've started to, you now have a 2+ game sample size and, you know, you have 3 games, you know, at midnight, late Monday night, we'll have an idea. You know, we'll see if the Ravens are 2-1 or 1-2, and we'll talk in those terms and they'll have a quick turnaround going to Kansas City, right? But you know, I definitely want to see a little more out of the guards. There's no question about that. But that said, it's not like McCary and Falele were, you know, I think Falele got a, you know, it was like some Pro Bowl consideration. He was an alternate, right? I mean, I don't see where I never saw that, but he had some performances where you'd say, okay, that was good enough. Like that was good enough, and that's kind of what I want from the guards. Good enough, right? Linderbaum's a Pro Bowl center. Ronnie Stanley at his best. I don't know if he's, you know, I don't know if he's a top three left tackle or a top five left tackle anymore, but he's in that upper third, right? You know, above average. And Rosengarten, I think, is an ascending player on his way to having a chance to be in that tier for right tackle. The guards just need to be good enough. You know,
And they
can you?
also need to not have penalties, dude.
Sure.
I mean,
And you know,
last
what?
year, for the times they were good enough, there were times they put him in first and 20, and
Sure.
Lamar's a magician about that, and so's Henry, and they get chunk plays and they do all that. But that's, you want to stay on schedule,
No
it just
doubt.
in a general sense. And I think those are the two questions. I'm still not convinced that they're going to be a penalty free team or a lighter penalty team. That remains to be seen. Whether they're better than they were last year, so far, jury's out on that for sure.
I mean, it's been good through 2 games. I mean, I think looking at the stats right now, they're tied for 11th in penalties entering week three. They're 5th in penalty yards. So that tells you they were down at 32. I think they were 32nd in one of those and 30th in that other one, just off the top of my head. I could be slightly off on that. We know it's a problem. So clearly they've, you know, through 2 games, so far so good in that regard. Now they've had a couple penalties here and there at times that have hurt them on drives, but every team's going to have some of that, right? I mean, one of the big things you're hearing a talking point, you know, more tush push talk about, you know, not just, you know, the before it was okay, is this play fair? Like blah blah blah. But you can flat out see examples of the Eagles' interior offensive linemen literally firing off the ball before it snapped, literally committing false starts that aren't being called. So that's obviously a big deal. So, you want to limit pre-snap penalties and things of that nature. And we going back to training camp, if you recall, I was talking about this, they had quite a few pre-snap penalties early in camp because they were working on cadence. They're trying to vary the cadence. It's just one more thing you can do to stress a defense
To not be predictable, sure.
that's already stressed about Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and knowing that half a false step from the wrong guy can mean a touchdown compared to a 4-yard gain. So that's just something that they're trying to add to their to the proverbial toolkit, right? I mean, that's what you're trying to do in year three of a Todd Monken offense. So, but that begins with the offensive line. That begins with being sharp pre-snap. I think the one thing about the offensive line that was kind of talked about as well was maybe they didn't do as well of a job pre-snap against Cleveland. Maybe they, whether it was Lamar, whether it was Linderbaum calling out, not so much that he didn't identify the mic. I mean, that's a simplistic, starting point, when you're blocking. But depending on what Cleveland was doing, maybe they didn't have things shored up in terms of who was blocking which guy, where was the double team coming, all that. So, you just want to see that be a little bit crisper. I mean, there are so many times where Lamar just plays hero ball, right? And I mean that positively with the off-script plays that he does. I mean, Josh Allen does the same thing, right? Patrick Mahomes through two games. I mean, look how many times he's scrambled with Kansas City's offense being in the state it is. These elite quarterbacks, that's what they do. That's not like a criticism, but you don't want to have to rely on that so much, right? You want to have good structure. You want to be on top of things on your P's and Q's pre-snap. You want to make sure assignment, alignment, technique is all as clean as it can be. And then you just have to go compete, right? And this is a Lions defense that, like I said, the defensive line's not as formidable as Cleveland's right now, but because they still have a couple guys that are coming back from injury that they won't have till later in the season. But hey, Hutchinson's, that's you're still talking about a heck of a player right there. He's back, and he's looked good so far. So, he's certainly someone you have to be aware of. He's not up front, but Brian Branch, their safety slash nickel, is a very strong, above average, Pro Bowl caliber player. It's not as though this defense is devoid of playmakers. So, I definitely want to see the offensive line bounce back. And if they do, I think the Ravens absolutely have a chance at a really big night. Because, like I said, at the end of the day, it's still a Lamar offense. It's still a Derrick Henry offense. And okay, Detroit, they saw him 2 years ago, and I'm sure they watched plenty of that tape, but they didn't like what they saw, that's for sure, as they reviewed it. So I still expect this offense to have a big night. And for me, my bigger concern still lies with, okay, defense, build on what you did on week two. But certainly it's quite the step up in competition when you're talking about facing the Detroit offense compared to Joe Flacco and the Browns in week two.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can follow him out on the interwebs. We're getting you ready for football on Monday night, all day Sunday. 1 o'clock games, 4 o'clock games, Sunday night, all day Monday. We're going to wait around, get together again, and then we're going to play some football on Monday. I mean, the Lions are a fascinating team. I mean, just as a franchise, I'm back to my buddy Schwartz coach there, and the fact that they never win, or the fact that they're finally good. The coach and Campbell having that weird early press conference and now turning out to be a coach's coach, right? Like a guy looks like he's going to keep his job a little while, and a guy that feels like he's winning with a quarterback that was a little bit cast off to the side. But talent position and talent players, I mean, they got a 1-1 quarterback as well who has been to Super Bowls. There's a lot of pressure on them, and playing outside of their dome and playing outside of their conference and playing on the road and playing at night, all of that. There's a lot of reasons to that America would look at this and say, Lions aren't coming to Baltimore beating Lamar Jackson. They're 4.5-point dogs.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think a big point, and we haven't talked about it, but it's a big factor, and it was a big factor for Detroit in week one. Everyone looks at week two and say, hey, hung 50 plus points on the Bears. Great. Look at how they were completely shut down by the Packers in week one. And I think that's where you look at the reality that they have two new coordinators. I mean, both their coordinators went on and are head coaches now.
They
So,
beat one of them last week.
yeah, when you're talking about replacing Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, I mean, John Morton, their offensive coordinator, week two looked good. Week one, not so good, right? Their defense coordinator, Kelvin Shepard, I mean, We're going to see what it looks like. I
By the
mean,
way, the Packers might be really good.
oh yeah. I mean, I if you want me to kind of handicap who looks the best through 2 weeks for whatever little bit that's worth, right? It'd be tough to argue against the Packers, right? I mean, they completely handled Detroit, their division rival, and handled them pretty emphatically. And I get it. Both games they played were at home, so I think that's a fair caveat. And then week two, they really smothered the Commanders, albeit Thursday night, short week, right? So there are caveats in there,
Well, it
but
smells good to be 2-0 if you're the Packers. You play two
sure.
games 10 days in, tough games, and you're 2-0. I mean, the Ravens have that going on here this week, 6 days, Kansas City. They go 2-0 in these two games. They've done something. I mean,
Oh, no doubt.
I looked at the schedule in the beginning. They already lost to the Bills, right? So, we talked about how that went, and they outplayed the Bills for 56 minutes. So, I'm not down on the Ravens. I'm down on their ability to finish. And I have question marks about injuries, and I have question marks about whatever deficiencies they have, including their ticker in that Ronnie Stanley, Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, Marlon Humphrey, I'll throw them all in John Harbaugh. They haven't won big games. They don't win
Yeah.
big. They win these games. They'll
They win
win
big
this.
games that they can do it in the regular season, but January, right? When they need to have it, that's
I've seen
when.
them boat race the Lions before. I've seen them boat race the 49ers, right? So if they go out and they win 45-16 on Monday night, that will not shock me at all. But that unto itself would tell me Ronnie Stanley's playing well and he's healthy. Linderbaum's in there. Rosengard, the offensive line's handling things. Derrick Henry's back to being Derrick Henry and not 11 carries for 23 yards. Lamar's not having to run for his life on every play. They're not in first and 20. They're getting off the field on defense. When they get in third and eight and they make a couple of good plays or the Lions have a penalty, you get them off the field. You don't get beaten in the back and let some tight end run wild for you on third and 13 and move sticks on. You get Lamar the ball back. So this is all the things they did 2 years ago to just freight train the Lions and end the game early. They've ended a lot of games like this early. I want to see the 2025 team be what all of that was in boat racing teams for years and years and years. They were boat racing the Bills pretty good 2 weeks ago, and then they let it get away. I want to see them finish. I want to see some killer instinct with this team. All these things you talk about in January, they need to win games in January. I'm not looking for style points in September, but I am looking to think that, yeah, this is the best Ravens team we've seen here in the Lamar era. That Derrick Henry is capable. Ronnie Stanley is young. Roquan Smith is not fat and he's hungry and he doesn't need Ray Lewis over there hype manning him all night on television. By the way, the Ravens' social media is just like, oh my God. It's just on and on and on every day. They try to create these little video miracles and miking Harbaugh and Flacco, and neither one of them wanted to be miked. They're out at the middle of the field and they're sharing all this stuff. I want to see them win, and not on social media 6 days a week by what's said and done. I want you and I to wake up on Tuesday morning and say they beat a Super Bowl contender and they did it in emphatic fashion. And this team's as good as any of the Ravens teams we've seen. I'm not ready to say that yet. I think
That's fair.
potentially,
That's
I
fair.
think in the offseason we talk about Flowers and how Bateman can be used. And I mean, D. Hopkins, my God, 2 weeks in, he looks like he can beat you. And we were all concerned, is he old? How are they going to use him? Well, they're going to use him 10, 12 plays a game. They're going to throw him the ball three or four times. And he's going to come, he goes up for the ball, he comes down with the ball. That's something that they didn't have with Nelson Aguilar, right? I mean, they had, so I can go through all of this and put my purple glasses on and say, my God, this is the best team that they've constructed in Lamar's era. And that would be saying something because the first team was really good when they had Marshall Yanda.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, see, for me, yeah, I think you look at the offense and acknowledging the relative concern with the offensive line. And again, it's relative, right? I think fans sometimes get caught up in, oh, well, this is a weakness, this is a weakness. And then you look at other teams, it's like, the Bills have weaknesses.
It's only a weakness
Kansas
if it
City,
gets exploited, right? I mean, literally.
but there are no perfect teams. I mean, we know that. This isn't 19, this isn't pre-salary cap era. I mean, every team has some flaws. So, but I think the offense, what's exciting about it is, and you just alluded to it a little bit. I mean, you mentioned, I think you mentioned Bateman in passing too. I mean, they haven't unlocked Bateman yet. Isaiah likely still hasn't played. I mean, he might play Monday night. He's practicing this week. I think we'll have a better idea as we get closer to Monday night in terms of look at the injury report. Did he log a couple full practices, right? I mean, if you're still in that limited territory, that's where you kind of say, okay, he hasn't practiced since late July. If it's only a couple limited practices, might be one more week, might be Kansas City. But regardless, I mean, Mark Andrews has done nothing so far, right? I mean, he's blocked. He couldn't hold on to a ball in the end zone, but that kind of reminded you of Lee Evans in that Cleveland game. But the point is, Keaton Mitchell hasn't been active through the first 2 weeks, and I think you'll see him get some chances at some point, just not right now. So there, for me, what's really exciting, encouraging for this Ravens team is I feel like there's still more meat on the bone for the offense, right? There's still more that you can point to deploy, and that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, well, then I think they're going to score 50 plus points a game. No, that's but. In terms of diversifying what you do, I mean, you said it. DeAndre Hopkins has given them someone on the outside who can win some 50-50 balls. They haven't had that in a long time. I mean, really long time. And that's not to say that he's going to pull in a touchdown every single week. But if you're in a big spot, if you're in a big game, a close game, a game you might need to come stage a comeback because that's going to happen at some point, then that's a nice weapon to still have. And the nice thing and the beauty about it is, yeah, he's 33 years old, but you don't need him to be the guy that's a 1500 yard receiver like he was in his prime. He can be an eight, I don't know if he'll be an 800 yard receiver. I don't know if he'll be a 5 or a 600 yard receiver, whatever it ends up being, but it could end up being 7 or 8 touchdowns, right? And some of those in some really big moments. So, Zay Flowers, we barely mentioned Zay. He's looked like a legitimate number one wide receiver these first 2 weeks. I mean, he's been fantastic. And
Well,
just
and they're
putting,
great at creating mismatches for him
yeah.
too, right?
I
I
mean,
mean,
and he beats people too. Like he matched up, look at how, Benford's a good corner for Buffalo. Look what Zay Flowers did against him. I mean, he didn't have any issues getting open against him. So point is, I'm in agreement with you on paper. This looks like it has the chance to be the most balanced, explosive, diversified, multifaceted offense that they've had. And that's saying a heck of a lot because last year's was fantastic. 2019 was fantastic in a different way. 2 years ago, it was very, very efficient, even if it maybe wasn't quite as explosive. So
Well, they
it's a
know what
really,
they want to do with Monken, and he's been here 3
high
years.
bar. Yeah. But
And now they've put players into those positions. They've
sure.
identified what they feel like Monken wants to mix into the offense, and starting with Lamar, obviously, but really starting with Derrick Henry. I mean, the minute they picked Derrick Henry up, things changed around here in regard to what kind of lunch pail you're going to have to pack to stop a running game.
I mean,
And
I'll still push back on that. They had fantastic running, but it's a different one in the sense that
it's heavy.
it's not as Lamar centric, whereas they're at a point now where, yeah, they still run some design runs for Lamar, and they should. Like, that would be idiotic not to still lean into that when you need to. You just don't have to rely on that part quite as much. Lamar's rushing yardage at this point is much more driven by some scrambles, and now we're seeing more and more even opportunities where he has to scramble, he's moving around and then he's throwing the ball downfield. So, I mean, it's a fire drill for these defenses when Lamar gets out in space. But to your point, yeah, you can hand the ball to Derrick Henry 20 plus times a game and feel great about that. And Lamar can just kind of hand it off a little bit more and chill. And that keeps him fresher for the fourth
Well,
quarter.
Lamar
And
running was their best play by
now
five for
it's.
years and years and years. Now it's a play, and it's a play you have, but
It's the
they've
duality.
established, yeah, of
It's the
course.
duality. I mean, their best
And you
play
hope that's
now
the
is,
difference maker in the end. If they win
you
three
hope so.
playoff games in January, that would be the differentiator, because there's not much they can do to boat race the Detroit Lions on Monday night to impress us. You know,
I
we're not
mean,
going to wake up Tuesday morning and say they're winning the Super Bowl because they boat race the Lions on Monday night, but they better boat race the Lions on Monday night.
well, they don't need, I'll just, I mean, they don't need to boat race. Me be impressed by that, but are we going to sit here and say it wasn't impressive if they win 27-24 on a Tyler Loop field goal at the end? I mean, like that's a good win. The Lions are really good, but I understand the point you're making. And look, with this offense, again, I'm not going to sit here other than, as I mentioned, the guard play. There's not a whole lot I point to that I'm going to poke holes in that isn't just the same things that we will continue to talk about until they get to January, which is the situational crunch time. Got to have it, highest leverage. And for me, and we talked about this a lot, you know, with what happened in Buffalo, for me, it's how do you respond when it goes sideways, right? How do you respond when the other team punches you in the mouth? They punch
Crisis
back.
management.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, you asked me about like, and you mentioned, is this the greatest iteration of the Ravens under Lamar? Well, on paper, the offense, I'll say it looks like it has every potential to be that. And that's a high bar. The
Based on the
defense,
offensive line doing their job, though, right?
for me, the defense is still more of a question. And again, relative. I think this, when it's all said and done, I think this is going to be a good defense. Is it going to be a special defense? Well, what's Jaire Alexander looking like? What's Mike Green look like with the pass rush, especially now without Kyle Van Noy these next few weeks? How do Oweh and Mike Green and Tavius Robinson and David Ajabo, you made the team. They didn't cut you at the end of the offseason or at the end of the preseason. I think you're going to get a chance to play. Hey, go make a play. Go show everyone you're an
Well,
NFL
Roquan was the
player.
best player on the field last week,
Yeah,
right?
he was, but he wasn't very good the week before. So now it, so like to me, the litmus test again, and I mentioned this, but I want to drill down a little more on the edge guys and their linebackers. You know, the Lions, Gibbs is an argument for maybe the best running back behind
Saquon.
Barkley. I mean, Derrick Henry isn't the receiving threat, right? But in terms of like all-purpose backs, Gibbs is right there. You know, Saquon, you know, he's fantastic. And David Montgomery isn't a slouch. You know, and he brings a little more of a physicality. But those two guys, you know, Detroit runs a lot of outside zone. I think they're going to test these edge guys because you have young edge guys who are going to want to do what? They want to get to the quarterback, right? But if you run draws and counters and misdirection, things of that nature, those guys, if they cheat and they're getting upfield and they're not keeping their rush lanes and what they're supposed to do with their run fits, then you could have some issues running, you know, stopping the run. So I want to see that. And specifically to Roquan Smith and I assume Teddy Buchanan, because we saw him play most of the snaps at the will linebacker spot. Gibbs is going to test those guys. You know, Sam Laporta, their tight end, is going to test those guys. So Roquan was fantastic, absolutely fantastic in week two. But we also remember him getting a stiff arm from James Cook on a big play in week one, right? We also saw their linebackers not play so well in week one. So this is a step up in competition as far as all right, defense, you had a good opponent to rebound against. You're playing at home. This is a way better Detroit offense than what Cleveland has. That's the Captain Obvious statement. So, for me, in a big picture sense, I want to see this defense. They're not going to shut them down. You know, I'm not going to sit here and be unrealistic and say, oh, hold the Lions at 10 points or 13 points. I mean, if they do, great. I'm not expecting that. But can you get some stops and can you finish in the fourth quarter? Right? I mean, we talked about it. You said it. They were controlling the Bills until they weren't anymore. And the defense was the biggest culprit, but they had breakdowns in all three phases. But this defense, and like I said, the injury report looms here a little bit. I mean, even Marlon Humphrey, who practicing fully, but he did have a groin issue in the fourth quarter, in week two. That's still something you want to, you know, you can't have him pulling up lame on the eighth play of the game or St. Brown. They could have their issues. There's no doubt because that guy's a phenomenal player working out of the slot. So they're going to have their hands full. So for me, in a big, you know, to bring it back to 30,000 feet with this Ravens team, plenty of talent, right? I mean, obviously, a lot of people think they're the best roster on paper in the NFL. The offense, I feel great about, even with my relative concern about the offensive line, specifically at guard. But on a defense, hey, there was a lot of hype about the secondary. Josh Allen and the Bills embarrassed them in week one. Okay. I hear Jaire Alexander wasn't ready to play, but yada, yada, yada. You need to rebound because this is a big test, right? You don't want to be in a position, you know, you made the comment about, you know, if they boat race them, if they blow them out, then you're really, really impressive. And I'd agree. But I also don't want this to be another game where it's 41-40 and, you know, the Bills have a chance, or Bills, excuse me, the Lions have a chance to kick a field goal at the gun and knock you off, and you were leading by 7 points or 10 points or whatever, right? So I want to see the defense play cleaner, but they are dealing with a few health things. And you know, again, as we get closer to Monday night, we'll have a, you know, injury report, WNST Baltimore positive tech service, all of that, so we'll have a better idea. But you know, they do have a few guys here and there that are banged up, that, you know, if you're talking about Wiggins, you're talking about Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Van Noy's out. Madubuike was banged up this week a little bit as well. Those pretty important players right there. So, but at the same time, the Lions, after the injuries they had with their defense last year, they're certainly not going to feel sorry for the Ravens, nor should anyone else.
Think of Dan Campbell. I've talked to the Detroit people that first press conference was so weird, so awkward,
Bizarre,
and
right?
now he feels like the right guy in that job, which they haven't had in a long time for some success. He's an interesting coach. He's different than all the rest of them in some way, right?
He is, but it's funny because they've also been a team that's gone for it and done some things that you would say were analytically sound or analytically influenced. He's not an old school coach in the way that punting on fourth and one from your opponent's 41-yard line in the way that you would think of an old school coach might handle things. Th things that Mike Tomlin, quite frankly, has done where I've taken issue at various times over the last 4 or 5 years. But Dan Campbell, he's a throwback in the way that he's blue collar. I think I've never stepped foot in Detroit, so I don't want to talk too much out of turn here. But the reputation that a city like Detroit has, blue collar, football team has had next to no success, for decades upon decades. I mean, you kind of think about Barry Sanders been a whole lot of just
I think of George
losing.
Plimpton for crying out loud,
Yeah.
right? That's
So I think he's been great in that way, but I think this is a really pivotal year for him and for them because he was regarded as having these two great coordinators. And look, John Harbaugh's heard this for years, right? Oh, well, you've had such great coordinators, or blah, 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 or at times you've had bad coordinators, right? I mean, it's the same low-hanging fruit, lowest common denominator arguments that all sports fans and media make in all markets, right? When things are going well, you love the coaches. When things are going poorly, you hate the coaches. And in between, you're still complaining about something. But when you lose both your coordinators, and you have a team that's had as much regular season success as Detroit has had the last couple of years. Yeah, there's going to be a spotlight on Dan Campbell in terms of, all right, how is John Morton going to do? How is Kelvin Shepard going to do as your coordinators? Did you take a major step down? Or, and we've also seen this happen, and New England's a great example of this for years with Belichick, where you think you have these genius coordinators, and then they go become a head coach somewhere, and oh, it's not as easy when Tom Brady isn't your quarterback, or it's not as easy when you don't have Bill Belichick, that's overseeing the thing. I mean, we've seen this with the different times with the Ravens, guys that become a coordinator elsewhere, that some of their defensive coaches, and maybe it doesn't work out quite as well. And that's not really a knock, but it speaks to if you have a good system in place. And I think that for me is where Detroit now, Dan Campbell now, this is your opportunity to show that you have a really good system and culture in place that's sustainable because if you're good, you're going to lose coordinators. I mean, look how many coordinators the Ravens have lost in John Harbaugh's tenure, to become head coaches and promote, all that.
Well, I mean, for
But
Dan Campbell to be the village idiot and the tough guy and the lunch pail guy to come in to have two of his coordinators picked to get jobs already, that speaks for itself. It speaks for the success that they've had there.
it does, but you also do need to replace them, right? I mean, you can't have it fall apart because then everyone starts to look at it and say, I guess Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, I guess they were and I say this in flippantly, I guess they were the true brains of the operation if there's some drop off when we know that, there's more nuance
We're
there.
still
Because,
questioning the defense around here since McDonald left.
right. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, Zach Orr, everyone said, was a genius at the end of last year. And then all of a sudden, he's an idiot again after week one, right? And not me saying that, but just talking about what the complaint is. It's a week-to-week league, right? And that's why I kind of said, okay, both these teams lost in week one. Both these teams had some clear warts exposed in week one. Both these teams rebounded emphatically against the division opponent in week two. So
And no one
week
would
three.
be shocked to see these teams playing in Santa Clara in February.
Sure.
Nobody.
I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. I think both these teams are fully expected to be second weekend of the playoffs at a minimum, right? I think that would be
Sure.
a colossal disappointment for either of these teams if they're not getting
In the
to the.
Final Four of the conference,
Yeah.
correct.
But
Yes.
that said, I think, especially in Detroit's case, Green Bay looks really good. Whereas the Ravens right now, Joe Burrow might be out for the year, is at least out until mid-December. So where is Cincinnati going to be? Pittsburgh, for all the talk about Aaron Rodgers, Pittsburgh's defense stinks through 2 weeks. They've been terrible. and the Browns are the Browns. So you kind of look at the Ravens, AFC North path. You look at Detroit. Hey, Green Bay. I think people are certainly not as high on the Bears or the Vikings, quite frankly. With the Vikings issues at quarterback, with McCarthy not looking great, now hurt. So, but both these teams are high expectations, right? These are two teams that have been regular season darlings in recent years. It's time to break through. So, is week three going to prove anything? Not really, but should be a lot of fun. And whoever's coming out of this one, the winner, is feeling quite good about themselves going into week four, as we're, as the 2025 season starts to take a little more shape and you start to have a better idea of just who all these teams, what all these teams are about through 3 weeks.
Well, the Bills won't have to worry about it. They're already 3-0. My wife and I were at Dodger Stadium on Thursday night. It was, 5:30, and I'm on a junket because of Janet Marie, 'cause she loves me. And I'm sitting there eating some food, looking up, and there's football on. It's 5 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. There's football on, and I'm on the West Coast, and I'm like, look at that. That's real football. Then I look up, and the Bills have already won. So when you talk about fulfilling your destiny, the Bills, who were behind to the Ravens by a couple touchdowns at home, they wake up, they're 3-0. The Ravens have the Lions and the Chiefs coming down the pike here. You got to make sure you're 3-1 and not 1-3 here in 8 days, 9 days, whatever it is.
No question. I mean, this is a big stretch. I mean, and it's not to say that I think they're going to go 1-3 because, I mean, I'm picking them on Monday night. I'll give you that right now. You can check out my, 12 thoughts and prediction at BaltimorePositive.com as we get closer to kickoff. But you look at the Bills, week one was their huge early season test and they passed it with their amazing final 8 minutes and the Ravens disastrous 8 minutes. But they've already played the Jets. They handled them, handled Miami Thursday night. I mean, at least the Dolphins showed half a pulse, but man, they're 0-3 and McDaniel being fired watch is on at this point. I mean, they looked better, but you're 0-3. But you look at the Bills, their next four games, home against New Orleans, home against New England, at Atlanta. All right, Falcons defense has been a little more impressive than
And
people
Penix is good
thought.
too. I like him.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a layup, but still a game that you would expect the Bills are going to
Winnable.
be favored. I think they're going to be favored in that game. And then at Carolina, I mean, their next truly tough game that you would look at, really tough game on paper that you would look at, is Kansas City coming to Orchard Park on November 2nd. So the point with that
Well, if they're
is,
7-0 and you're 4-3, you might feel okay about being 4-3, but they were going to be 7-0.
well, that's if that
And
plays
have the
out.
tiebreaker against you, right?
I was just going to say, if that plays out, that's just like the Ravens in Kansas City last year, right? Where Kansas City got off to this, got on a roll, winning all these one score games. Yeah, it wasn't like impressive, like they were winning by four touchdowns, but you looked up and they were 8-0 or whatever they were at that point in time. And the Ravens were, already kind of sort of out of the number
Yeah,
one
I mean,
seed race.
the Ravens better win this division by two or three games at this point. Like, to me,
You would think so.
I don't think
I mean,
Cincinnati can't get the double digits. If Pittsburgh can, it's probably just 10. And the
yeah.
Ravens better get to 13 or 14. And, I don't think the Ravens are going to win better not be 11-6. 11-6 will still win their division, though. I'm convinced of that
Yeah,
at
I
this
mean,
point.
and I think, I think it's tough to just kind of say, oh, they're going to win 14 games. I think I had them at 12-5,
Well, are
because
you
I.
thinking of them as a 3 seed or a 4 seed or a
Well,
1 seed? Because
but that
nothing
also
matters
depends.
except January, right? Like, nothing
It
matters
does.
except January and their
Sure.
health in January and whether they're playing at home or on the road. And right now,
But they've also had the number one seed twice and lost in January.
I
So,
still like that better.
oh, sure. No question. And look, I mean, Buffalo, you look at their schedule. I mean, now they do have some tougher games as the year goes on, but you kind of look at that division. I mean, the Jets, I think people
You
thought,
look at it, you say that it's over. They're 3-0 in the season, and nobody can catch them to some
yeah,
degree.
I mean,
But Josh Allen has to stay healthy. I mean, there's a lot that has to go right. But I mean, just playing
right. I
this
mean,
out as the chalk, I'm trying to figure out a pathway for the Ravens, given their schedule and given having already lost to Buffalo. But that this thing, it looms large, and it looms even
sure.
larger when they've already won on Thursday night, and you've got two tough games coming up that you're really trying to keep pace with the Bills here. I'm not thinking about the Bengals and the Steelers
Yeah.
anymore. I'm thinking about the Bills. I'm not
Well,
even thinking about the Chiefs, but you better beat them next week.
I was just going to say, you have an opportunity to put and of course, we're doing a little assuming here. I mean, they've got to go to the Giants and win, but Assuming that happens, and if someone's listening to this and that game's already taken place and didn't happen, then hey, Luke was wrong. But assuming they win, I mean, you've got a chance to make the Chiefs 1-3. I mean, think about that. You've got a chance to make them 1-3. So, and obviously Buffalo would love that, but they're still the Chiefs, and I still think the Chiefs are going to be there in some capacity. I mean, they're not going to go 15-2 like they did last year, but they are still the Chiefs, right? They're still the champs in the AFC, and have been for a long time now. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity. But yeah, I mean, we talked about it leading into week one. I said to you, I don't care about the revenge thing, or that's all fun week one narrative, because you just, everything's the biggest thing that, everything that's right in front of you is the biggest thing because it's recency bias and all that. But that game was really, really important as it pertained to the number one seed, right? I mean, a head-to-head tiebreaker. Doesn't mean the Ravens can't get the number one seed. And to your point, if Josh Allen in week six turns his ankle and has a five, he's out 4 games, then that completely changes things. But same holds true if something happens to Lamar. Cincinnati, their season, if it's not over, it kind of feels like it, right? I mean, and Browning is a decent backup, but he's not Joe Burrow, right? So, what it can change just like that. That's why. Maybe it goes back to the beginning of our conversation of, I'd like to see the Ravens offensive line play a little bit better, certainly than they did against Cleveland, because you want to keep Lamar Jackson healthy and upright all year.
Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke. He's also at Owings Mills all weekend long. We're still watching some Orioles baseball. I watched the Dodgers and the Giants on Thursday night. I will be back this weekend in time for Sunday, 1 o'clock. We'll be ready for football on Monday night as well. We'll have you covered on Tuesday morning. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We had a great, great stop this week over at Beaumont. Sat in the window there, gave out some tickets. I even had a cop and coach Larry Stewart, former NBAer, stop by and said hello. You'll hear all of that out at Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, getting you ready for Monday night. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.